Podcasting 2.0 for June 7th, 2024, episode 182, Drop the Dongle. If it's Friday, it's Podcasting 2.0. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is where we talk about podcasting, the future. Today, we'll actually be talking about the past as well and what they can bring into the future. Confused yet? Don't worry, you won't be. Everything happening at podcastindex.social, the namespace, podcastindex.org, and this is the only boardroom that celebrates the heroes of podcasting. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who can't get aggravated even by comic strip blogger. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. Dave Jones.
I can get aggravated by comic strip blogger. I just choose not to.
I have known him for, I want to say 17 or 18 years, and he still doesn't aggravate me. He is a feature, not a bug.
That's a long time to know comic strip blogger.
Yeah, I've actually met him once in person. How about that?
His own parents haven't known him that long.
That's a good way of looking at it. Oh, man. Yeah, we got a great guest today. I can't wait to introduce him to everybody. I'm very excited. Haven't spoken to him in, 10 years.
No, it's a reunion. It's a family reunion.
It is, man. It is a family reunion.
Heroes of podcasting. That sounds like a document. It sounds like a good documentary title.
You know, right? I have done at least three documentaries, interviews for documentaries. Not a one has ever come out.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. No, documentaries, to get them funded, it's impossible. And then once you get it funded, nobody ever makes their money back. I mean, documentaries is a horrible, horrible business.
Netflix kind of killed the whole documentary thing, didn't they? Because they just said, okay, we're just going to pay everybody up front. There's no long-term benefit to this.
I would say that's even worse than that. Amazon Prime really killed it. They take some astronomic amount, like 80%, and they just kick you off, and it's a mess, which is why I hope our boy can get IndieHub up and running. Value for value documentaries. I think there's something there. I really do.
Dadgum, I forgot to send him a Podping token. God, I've got to remember.
Okay. Write it down. But it's okay. It'll show up in the AI transcript summary.
No, here's what I'm going to do.
Reminder, Dave needs to send IndieHub dude a what kind of token?
Podping.
So Podping token. Yeah. Yes, Podping.
Siri, remind me to send IndieHub dude a Podping token in 3 hours.
Wow. And here's the guy who's upset about the Windows snapshot. You're just reading your life into Siri. What's wrong with you, Dave Jones?
Here's what the reminder came through as. Send indie do to PP token.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever
AI is going to save the world, everybody. It's going to save it. It's going to save it.
It's going to be great.
All right. I got to talk about wallets for a moment, but I just want to make sure everyone understands what's going on. It looks like Albie's having some issues today with the incoming. Okay. The last incoming sats I got on my Albie wallet was about 8 hours ago. And this is, of course, what I warned about. This is your centralization. I would like to explain the solution to everybody for podcast app wallets.
Please do.
Okay. So first, let's understand how the system works. No matter what you're using, somewhere there's a node, and that node needs to be online. And for sending, that node really only needs to be online the minute it has to send something, and then it's really not that important. And we'll talk about podcaster wallets later on, but this is just purely from an app perspective. So we have all kind of consolidated on the Albie API because it was easy to do. Don't have to think about how the Lightning Network functions. So I want to give a high-level overview and then present people with a solution, because ultimately, in a perfect world, everybody would have their own node and it would just, you'd connect your app to it and it would work. Of course, that is a very imperfect world because you're not going to ask your app users to start up a node on Umbral or Start9 or anything like that. However, there is and in addition to that, just bringing up a node doesn't mean the node works. You need
channels and you need money in those channels. So yeah,
liquidity.
Liquidity, yes. So that requires money, which is another thing you just kind of don't want to ask your users to do. However, there's been a solution for several months. And, as always, it doesn't really matter until things fall apart. And then we have to go and fix them. And from what I understand, Albi is no longer going to create wallets for U.S. customers. And it's just very unclear where they're at. And I don't blame them. I understand it. They're Germans. And I don't mean in a bad way. They're like the French. The French pulled out. The Germans are pulling out. I get it. Our regulatory environment is confusing. However, having your own node, even in the App Store, is completely okay. This has been proven by the Breeze app. If you've never used the Breeze app, I suggest developers grab the Breeze app and just play with it for a little while, because it really is a wonderful system. You get the app, you load some Bitcoin into it, you can buy it, or you can send some from on-chain or Lightning or wherever you want to get it from. And even that's it. You haven't opened a channel, you haven't done anything. It opens it for you automatically. And when you send it, make sure that your channel is big enough to send it. Does it all dynamically. This is what Roy has taught us over several years, Roy from Breeze. This is what a Lightning service provider does. And this is what Breeze has always been. Their app is really just a reference app. And so they're finally rolling everything out, and things are going quite quick. Cake Wallet just added, or is about to add, I think July, the Breeze SDK. And so what you need for every user of your app is a node. Now, you can have a node that is separate from the app, or you can have a node, a very slimmed, pared-down version of the node that only uses the pieces of that node when necessary in your app through the free Breeze SDK. You add that, and I'm simplifying it because I've never added an SDK. Actually, I have added an SDK. I once built an app and I did put an SDK in. So I have seen how nice. It works. Yeah. I actually built an iPhone app back in the day, the Big Book Show.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Yeah. You had a Freedom Controller page for that.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So I do know how it works. And there's calls inside of that to send a payment. And the beauty of it is that the Breeze SDK automatically comes with this Lightning service provider that is provided by Breeze, and they take care of all the stuff. So you don't have to worry about it. All you need to do is make sure that when it's time to send a payment, that you make the key send call, it sends it to the appropriate splits, and you're done, because you've basically given your customer, your user, a node. It works. Now, What do we do with web apps? Oh, it doesn't work. Well, here's the beauty of it. Greenlight, which is working very closely with Breeze, because Breeze, again, is a Lightning service provider, has an API. Now, you can download Greenlight and run it on your own server, but it probably seems much easier just to use their API, since that's what developers like. And you could even do this from your app if you want, although you'll find out why there's reasons not to. And the minute you need to make a payment, you send the call through the API. Greenlight then spins up a node real quick, like within milliseconds, makes the payment, waits to see if there's something else coming, and then shuts down again. And it's the same node, so you have the same node address. And the Lightning payment and all the plumbing is done by the Breeze Lightning service provider. So what you're doing is you're giving your customer, your user in that case, their own node that they operate, and it just goes up. The reason why it's very efficient is because it doesn't have to stay online all the time, because it's really only sending payments. And Greenlight gives you 1,000 nodes for free just to start testing it. So that's if you have a web app, I'm thinking Sam Sethi, or if you don't want to use an SDK. Now, above that, they say, hey, give us a shout, give us a call, and we'll figure out what you need if it's more than 1,000. I'm sure many people will expect to have more than 1,000. But I'm pretty confident that if it comes down to Sam Sethi, he'll negotiate the heck out of it with those guys. Then he'll probably wind up getting 10,000 for free.
Right.
But this is the way forward. In addition, both the Breeze SDK and the Greenlight API use Core Lightning, which appears to be a lot more developer-friendly, and they have also already implemented Bolt 12, which is really the next step in where we need to go with wallets for V4V streaming and boosting.
That's where we need to go.
And so I have actually tried this. I got the developer. I got my token. I copy-pasted some code, and it works. You can send a Lightning payment right from the command line, and it works beautifully. Now, in addition to this great system, you also have a choice of Lightning service providers. So you don't have to use the Breeze SDK or Greenlight with the Breeze Lightning service provider. There are others, Olympus being one, which is Zeus. The Zeus app uses that. So there's no upfront cost for your users. It just works. And these guys are already putting in on-ramps right into their system. So it's, you know, relatively easy. You never know, you know, your mileage may vary depending on your country and, you know, all kinds of fuzzy stuff that I don't know. I mean, people might have to still KYC, but it's relatively easy to buy and to get Bitcoin into your wallet, even from on-chain, etc. And it's pretty much sovereign. So you can tell your users, hey, you've got the keys. Don't lose them because that's on you and there's nothing else to support. And I have a feeling, just looking at the world, that more and more people are going to actually be interested in podcasting with Bitcoin than we realize. We're getting to a point where Bitcoin is in the public eye. Some people have it in their 401ks. Some people have it in their own retirement accounts. Wisconsin retirement system actually just bought $100 million worth of Bitcoin. That's a very conservative retirement outfit. And more people are going to be interested in how do I get some of that Bitcoin? So on the podcaster side, we have some work to do because this Greenlight system does not work with Keysend, but the Bolt 12 side will work. So I implore everyone to take a look at that because I don't feel very confident with what I'm seeing from our Albi brothers. And I know it's work, but I really, truly believe that this is the way forward. I've been saying it for months and months and months. And I even tested it myself. This took a lot of work on my part. This is very hacky the way Adam does stuff, but it really does work. And go ahead.
Can you tell me exactly what you did? Because you said I tested it from the command line and it worked. I mean, what did you do?
Yeah. So Greenlight. I only tested the Greenlight and the LSP part. So I got the Greenlight. You get a token. So you can use it in a Python script. I think it does Rust, Python, a couple other languages. And I just copied and pasted their demo script and sent a Keysend payment. And
this
it worked.
Is Greenlight. This is not the Breeze SDK.
No, exactly. The Breeze SDK is only for apps. But the Greenlight API uses the Breeze Lightning service provider to take care of all the liquidity. So you don't have to worry about that. So it just works. I didn't have to fund a channel, didn't have to do anything at all. It just worked.
And you're saying that the Greenlight nodes do not support Keysend.
No, they support Keysend out, but the way they operate is they spin up the minute you need to send. This is kind of the problem that Sphinx had back in the day, is they couldn't figure out how to start up little mini nodes for everybody with liquidity built in because it just wasn't available. The Lightning service provider piece wasn't there yet. So that's now here. And I don't know what Sphinx is doing anymore. But Greenlight basically just spins up the node when necessary. The beauty of it is that they do Bolt 12 so we could move to Bolt 12 and Bolt 12 incoming, as far, I haven't been able to try that, as far as I understand, does work because they will trigger the Bolt 12 invoice procedure. So it'll start up and you'll receive it in your interface app, whatever it is.
Right.
But now I've asked Oscar, who has gone quiet. I don't know why. I've asked him if Zebedee, if they're using LND or CLI. I don't know what the, I have a feeling they're using LND, but I don't know for sure.
Possible.
Because if they're using CLI, then we can just move to Bolt 12 and it removes a whole bunch of problems. But in the meantime, hosting companies are certainly able to provide some kind of services to their podcasters. I mean, Wavelake has done it. You may not want to do it, but I think moving towards the future, hosting companies should be also providing wallet solutions for their podcasters.
So the listen, I mean, if there's outbound key send on the listen, on the listener wallet side, that, I mean, that is fine. I mean, it's that's perfect.
That's exactly what we need. Yeah.
Right. That's exactly what we need. The issue, you know, on the receiving side, is less of a problem at this point in time.
Yes, correct. And it's a solvable problem. It's just how people want to solve it. You know, I again think it should be the hosting companies that do this because the model has been set. I mean, the model is there. And there's many ways to solve that. You know, there's people pay for services. So, you know, there's ways to solve that. I'm seeing a path, and that path is through Bolt 12, and Bolt 12 already works on Core Lightning.
The developer of Core Lightning wrote the initial spec for Bolt 12.
Yeah, that's why it works.
Rusty Russell, I think is his name.
I don't know.
I think he's the core developer for, or lead developer for Core Lightning. But the Bolt 11, which is what the main thing that Lightning has used since day one, in my opinion, was always a big mistake. Always. No other payment system requires you to have the receiver send you an invoice first before you're allowed to pay them.
Right.
If you think of any other payment exchange architecture, whether it's PayPal or Cash App or Venmo or even your bank, you never have to get permission to send the other person money. That's just
It's very weird.
Now, yeah, I understand. If you look at the technicals, you understand why they did it that way, because they do the pre-image and then they need to reverse the encryption out of the onion as it goes through the node hops.
Reverse the encryption out of the onion, Captain.
but it's still wrong. It's still the wrong solution. You have to do a different, you need to architect a better solution. And that better solution is Bolt 12.
Yes.
And it's unforgivable, in my opinion, that LND has existed for 6 years and still does not have Bolt 12 support.
Right. In our world, Fountain is an important player in value for value. If they don't have Bolt 12, it's not going to be a great starter to move to Bolt 12. Now, we can have options and, you know, send key send if, but, you know, I just don't know where they're at. I don't know what they're using. And LND may have a complete different game plan. You know, who knows what they're doing? They're doing all kinds of stuff that is not necessary.
They're implementing Bolt 12. They are. I mean, I see their roadmap as they send weekly emails, but it's like they just started. I mean, like they just, I think version 18 of LND is just putting in the very beginnings of Bolt 12. I mean, it could be months before it's ready.
Now, I'm seeing Cake Wallet. I'm seeing them making interesting moves. It's very possible that after they implement the Breeze SDK, that their desktop wallets may also implement key send receive through the LSPs. You still don't want, I mean, even Zeus Wallet, who are CLI backend through Olympus, they said, I saw a thread on the on podcastingnext.social, that they are going to make something so that you can run their app in the background persistent. I don't know how that does with battery life, that you can have key send receive, but it's not really the optimal solution because you lose connectivity. You know, you lose connectivity. You've got no money. Right. You got no money coming in.
Right.
But I really would like developers to consider implementing the Breeze SDK or, you know, or through the Greenlight API if the SDK is not your thing. Because it's somewhere someone has to run a node for all this stuff. And when Bolt 12 is fully implemented, you'll see lots of wallet solutions that people can just use for receiving, and then maybe there'll be ways to tie that in, et cetera. But if right. if we don't bridge this gap, we're going to lose momentum.
Oh, for me, certainly. I was ready to give up this past week. I mean, I was seriously, just the idea of having to go back and re-architect in a completely different solution and all that stuff it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's frustrating. It's a momentum killer. And, you know, that, so I you're right. You're right. The other thing is, let's kind of look at the landscape a little bit. This was all okay until this administration, this current presidential administration just went full on nuts with attacking Bitcoin, and you know, not just the Samurai wallet stuff and the and all the coin mixer prosecutions, but with vetoing the bank custody of cryptographic assets, regulations out of the SEC. I mean, it's such an odd sort of like cognitive dissonance going on, because you have the approval of ETFs and large institutional buying and big banks, and everybody has now embraced fully Bitcoin as an asset, and at the same time you have the executive administration just pulling the rug out from so many people by saying, by just intentionally putting forth this idea, this uncertainty and fear that you could be prosecuted as a money transmitter for anything they just happen to not like.
Right. Well, so and, I agree, but my gold standard, if you will, is I look at the app stores, the most conservative people there are. And they are fine with this solution.
No, I'm saying, like, no, yeah, I'm on the same page with you, because what I'm trying to get at is the answer is going to be non-custodial.
Yes, that's always been the answer. I think we right. know that. Even when we looked at LMPay, I mean, it's forget the money transmitter part. And mm-hmm. I think Zebedee has money transmitter licenses in every state except Florida. There may be one other one, which is odd, but okay, it's what it is. So fully self-owned, non-custodial has always been the way to go. We've always known that that's what it was, because I mean, the overhead of just managing a single node. I mean, our node alone, when something goes wrong, it has to be restarted. Well, kiss 5 hours goodbye.
Right.
You know, it takes a lot of work to keep it all running, and liquidity, and make sure all that's fine. And there's just a lot of stuff that's going on.
Right.
And this
you're going to have to either be non-custodial, or have a custodial API layer in front of an institution who has all the proper licensing.
Exactly.
Those are your two choices.
And you can't trust that.
No, I mean, you can't. Well, I mean, I don't think I agree. I think we mean two different things. I think I understand what you mean. You mean you can't trust it in the sense that, you know, not your keys, not your coins.
No, I mean, just like exactly, you know, it's like something goes down, all the wallets are down.
Right.
You know, someone decides they don't want to play anymore. Everything's gone.
I'm a little looser with my, you know, with that kind of stuff. Because
yeah, but I'm like, from Texas. We don't mess around here.
Right. Yeah. You could have a 380, but you got a 45.
That's right. I'm just saying.
You know, the custodial solution backed by a bigger player. It's, I mean, that's a cheap, it's a 38 special.
Yeah.
And it's more like
a 22 LR. Okay.
Long rifle. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, those are your really only two solutions. The days of LNPay and, you know, and Albi and these companies, like kind of like flying under the radar. I mean, Roy told us this almost a year ago. He said, everybody is just on the regulatory side of things. Everybody's just sort of like doing it and hoping that everybody doesn't notice.
So
those days are kind of, those are coming to an end.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And the thing is, it's not unexpected. And, you know, so I see today, I don't know what's going on with Albi. You can stream and boost Albi to Albi wallet. Fountain to Albi seems to not be working, which is a bummer because, you know, Albi without a doubt, head and shoulders above everyone else with the V for V payments. But I remember when everybody was integrating Albi, everyone was on podcastingnext.social trying it out and sharing the information with each other, and we got it done. and I know, I spend days trying to figure out how to test this green light thing. I get it, but it's doable.
Michael and Moritz are coming on the show here in a couple of weeks, and, you know, they can fill in the gaps of our knowledge about exactly what is going on their side, because I get the feeling that they are just from what I'm seeing, the reports I'm seeing from them, because I exchanged an email with them too. Mm-hmm. And, I have a sense from the outside that they are trying to, rebuild the plane in flight.
Yes.
They don't want to mess up anybody.
But
there's real regulatory issues to be done. So they're trying to they're putting solutions in place like all over the place, trying to figure out how to do this in a way that doesn't really screw everything up.
I know part of what they're doing is they're going to also implement Lightning service providers, which makes a lot of sense, but somewhere still a node has to run. So are they going to be just an API on front of Greenlight in front of an LSP? I mean, that's possible, but when I see things about, well, we can use the Apple App Store Boost API, like hard no. No.
Right.
No,
right.
Just hard no. No, that's not a solution. And, you know, there's just a lot of attention has been focused on other things. And here we are.
There's a lot of these problems are left over, largely uninteresting artifacts of just LND's structure.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I don't know how Core Lightning is, but LND is a one-to-one relationship. You have a wallet. When you have an LND node, you have a wallet.
Yeah.
And that wallet is tied to an on-chain wallet. There's no sense of different wallets or different users all on the same node. If that was the case, if Lightning wallets themselves on an LND instance, if there were many wallets tied to one Bitcoin backend node, and those each one of those Lightning wallets had a key feature for unlock or spend or something like that. That would make all of this much easier too.
Yeah, but I don't see that happening. I mean, that's not the way core Lightning works either.
No, I don't see that happening, but I'm just saying that there's a lot of technical debt here. I think that because from the beginning, these things should have been designed differently, like Bolt 11 and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So these are all just in a similar way to me, in a similar way that LNURL is a hacky workaround for the limitations of Bolt 11. The same thing, LSPs are a workaround for the lack of hosting multiple wallets on the same node.
I don't see that.
Well, let's say that I'm Podverse. Yeah. And here's a better example. Let's say that I'm Podhome and I want to host wallets for all my podcasters.
Right. Well, that's something different. You know, we're talking to this is, I think this is where the confusion sometimes comes in.
Okay.
That's the receiving side. That's the podcaster side.
Right. But I'm just trying to simplify. Okay. All right, fine. Let's do Podverse example. So I'm Podverse. I want all my users to have a wallet. I could spin up a node and then start hosting wallets. And if they had a key, keyed spend or a keyed interaction architecture for multiple wallets on a node, then I could just spin up the wallet, hand the keys to the user, and all I'm doing is funding the node. I don't have the right to spend anybody's money.
Yeah, but that solution doesn't exist, and that's not where it seems to be going. The Lightning service provider part is literally opening and closing channels to each individual node that is brought on, either through the SDK or through the Greenlight architecture.
Right.
So
yeah, and it's because of this. It's because Lightning nodes themselves can't host multiple wallets.
Right, but I also think that's the right way to do it. The right way is to have self custody over your node and over everything that's happening with your node. But I just don't. Otherwise, this is exactly where we landed. Is then you're a money transmitter. You are transmitting money on other people's behalf. That's why you can't really have a node and have multiple wallets on it.
Well, I think we're just, I don't want to get too wrapped up in that. I think we're saying different things because it's largely irrelevant. But what I was just getting at is that if you can host multiple wallets that, then you are your own LSP. As long as the wallets are protected, where you can't spend the funds, then if I have a Lightning node that can host multiple wallets, I'm not talking about LN bits. I'm talking about if the Lightning node itself implements this at the base layer. I'm talking about that. If that's the case, then I'm just opening and closing channels. I don't have the rights to spend anybody's funds because I don't have the keys to their Lightning wallet. But you know, so the LSPs were born basically as a workaround for that issue.
Right.
So, because it allows everybody to have their own node because nodes can't host multiple protected wallets.
Right. But I also don't see, unless you're seeing something, I don't see any roadmap where that's going to happen.
No, I don't either.
Okay.
It's like I said, it's largely just an academic argument. I'm just saying that like so many of these things, LNURL, LSP, it's just unfortunate because some of these things were ill-designed from the beginning, and LNURL and LSPs are having to fix these fundamental flaws in the architecture.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
Well, I mean, that's the argument. Is it a fundamental flaw in the architecture, or was it always the intent for every individual to have their own node?
You know, maybe so.
That's what I think the intent was. Everybody has their own node, which is why we have Start9 and Umbral and all this stuff. But that's not user friendly. I can see a podcaster doing it. But there are hosted node solutions. I think as cheap as $5 a month, but and now with LSPs, that actually makes it doable for a mere mortal, because the minute you have to get into, ride the lightning and all this stuff, and you have to start managing channels, it's a whole, and I guess all I'm saying is that, I think a lot of, app developers were happy they didn't have to learn how Lightning works. It just works. You just tie it into the API. And now so that's why I just tried to say, look, if you can just a little bit of, I just read the docs of Breeze SDK or Greenlight, and it's pretty clear. You don't have to, still don't have to know much about it. I just want to make sure that the underpinnings were clear, because I do not see hosted solutions having much of a future.
The only way they would have a future is with a change to the regulatory landscape.
Yeah, which I can see they just won't do. That's not happening.
Yeah, so you'd have to have a U.S. administration that would come in and say, and make it clear, like with marijuana laws, they're still just as confusing at the federal level. Nobody has ever fixed that. That's just as messed up as this, where you'd have to have just somebody come in and say this all and just fix it all and say this is fine. You can't hold out hope for that. That's just kind of like, peeing in the wind.
So Erhead says all this spontaneously spun up channel seems like a poor idea long time as the fees rise. No, because they are connecting channels. It's like a virtual channel. It's like a private channel that comes from their own Lightning infrastructure. So it has nothing to do with on-chain fees. There is a fee for opening.
It's a submarine swap.
Yes.
Right?
Not even that. I mean, they literally are splitting off their own channel. They have channels open. You're just getting a piece of it, the way I understand it. So it's not like you're opening a channel. It's immediate. The minute you receive a payment, it takes the payment plus 100,000 sats, and there's your channel. And then if you want to send more than 100,000 sats, they increase the channel on the fly. That's how it works. Now, they do take a fee, but it's more like a Lightning fee, and it's not an on-chain fee. But ultimately, and I can just never see this changing, because you then are, if you're not using that type of a system, you're a money transmitter. And, that's why Zebedee is doing okay, except for one or two states, because they have all the licenses and they put a lot of time and money into getting those, I'm sure.
What else supports Bolt 12? I mean, because the other side of this is, if you're a podcaster and a thing like Cash App supports Bolt 12, then
you'll be able to receive already. Yeah, then you'll be able to receive on your Cash App. Absolutely. And I think that's where it's going.
I don't know if they support that yet. I don't know if any of those big players like Cash App, Strike, PayPal, I don't know if they support Bolt 12.
Zeus, I think, supports Bolt 12.
Okay. Well, that's a thing.
Yeah. Hold on a second, Dave. Hold on. Something happened with my recording. That's my damn disc. I think my disc is rotten.
No, are we screwed?
No, we're good. I have a backup recording running. No worries. Okay. But it just seems like that's what everyone's waiting for. Core Lightning has it already. I think Core Lightning is moving ahead. They already are implementing it. So you're going to see wallets everywhere that implement Bolt 12, and that'll make the receiving side super easy for everybody. Because you just grab a wallet that supports Bolt 12. The issue is where's Fountain? Are they using LND or Core? Can they do Bolt 12? Or whenever Bolt 12 comes, then that'll work. But in the meantime, we have a little period to bridge.
Yeah, I need to. We need to get an answer from Oscar on that. Sir Spencer says Core Lightning, Eclair, Breeze, SDK, LDK, which is Lightning Development Kit, and Zeus all support Bolt 12. Well, If LDK supports Bolt 12, then you would think Cash App should, because it's built on LDK.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. We can test it. I mean, I'm fine. I mean, we just closed phase 7, so we're about to go into phase 8, you know, here soon, and Bolt 12 is a logical thing to go ahead and start putting in there.
Yeah.
We need, it's time.
Yes. It's time. It's time, Dave Jones. It's time. It's time to do it.
Is it time for our guest?
Well, before we get to our guest, I wanted to do a little plug. I have zero financial interest, no shares, no nothing. I just love this kid. I love Fernando, who built the Pod Mobile device, which if I was a podcast hosting company, I would offer these. I would pass it through, but I would offer these to my customers. This device is awesome. And so he sent me the new version. I now have 10 of these things at home.
10?
Actually, I think 5 probably. He keeps sending me, like, try this version. I'm just trying to help him out. Trying to help a brother out. Listen to how good this sounds. So I got this one yesterday. It came straight from the assembly factory. I plugged in my mic straight in, my EV320. I plugged it into the computer with the USB. And now what he did is he has this little mix knob, so you could mix between what you're, hello Phoebe, you can mix between what you're playing on the computer. So it's not just an interface, but it's also a mixer, and it has the, mm-hmm. it has Adam Curry approved sound in it, including noise gate, EQ. This is a minute of audio I recorded. I sent it to him this morning. And it's set up in literally 5 minutes. Listen to this. All right. Currently, I am on Denoise Blue, Equalizer Orange, and it's on the, what is this, EV320. That is the microphone that I'm using. I'm kind of digging the sound right now. And oh yeah, baby. That's exactly the way you want it. So now I'm actually just got my finger on the mix button. There's the dog in the background. Just using it to talk over. It picks up the dog, but it doesn't when it's not supposed to. See, that's completely quiet, and I have the door open. And you don't hear any background. Oh, man. I think you've done it, brother. I think you have done it. How about that? How good does that sound?
That sounds fantastic.
I mean, he's got you can even plug in an SMB7 without a cloud lifter. It's amazing. Oh,
it's got built-in preamp
that and everything? Yeah, it's got everything.
Well, I mean, the RE320 is a hungry mic, too. It needs a lot of preamp.
It does.
And I don't think it's as much as the SM7B, but it's pretty close.
It doesn't need as much, but
I needed a cloud lifter with my Evo 4 before. Oh yeah. If you don't have a decent preamp for the 320, it suffers.
I'm just and the you know the price is like $320 or something for the 2 mic version. Mm-hmm. Dude, it's amazing. This is what I wanted to build. This is exactly what I wanted to build. It's all DSP now. It's nice. It's really nice.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys got it together.
That's pretty nice.
He's got it together. Yeah.
That's good. So you were at Equalizer Orange?
Yes. So what is that? Well, there's like 4 different EQs, which are predetermined. And that was the second step. And so the other ones just became too boomy for me. But it's the denoiser. So you select kind of a gate. One that doesn't cut out too much, and then you hold, and it's just a capacitive touch button. You hold that, and then you're just quiet, and then it sets to the noise level, and you let go, and then it's completely quiet. So it does all that dynamically. Okay. It's exactly what you want for someone who just wants the podcast. You know, just wants
activate
to do it.
Equalizer Orange.
Exactly, that's exactly what it is. Anyway, that I'm just saying. If I was a hosting company, I would consider offering this to people.
Sell them at a discount, like a starter kit.
Yeah, yeah. You can. I'm sure you can get them wholesale from him for much cheaper.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Good to go. I mean, hosting companies, wallets, and devices. There you go. If you want to diversify yourself or make yourself unique from others, or just try to sell yourself.
I had, it's always an option.
We're waiting to find out who it is. We're all curious.
Yes, we're all waiting.
We have ideas.
We're with bated breath.
Yeah. Who's falling down?
I had beer, with Tom Rossi from Buzzsprout. He was in Birmingham.
Nice.
Wednesday night. We had beers and talked shop, and it was fun. Great to see him.
Guys are great. Those guys are great. All right, so we bring in our guest who's been waiting patiently in the wings. He's probably fallen asleep by now. But, hey, it's been 10 years at least since I've spoken to him in person on the phone. And I am
Who is it, Adam?
Well, and he's been going through his archives and posting stuff on podcastindex.social, things I had long forgotten. One of the first people who showed up when I started tinkering around with Apple scripts and trying to figure out how to make a pod catcher. Please welcome to the boardroom, the one, the only, the hero in my mind of the app developers of podcasting. Hello, Andrew Grummet.
Hey guys, how you doing?
You're awake.
Shout out to the boardroom. Yes.
Sorry for taking so long, man. We had to get that out.
It's all good. I'm learning stuff.
Well, since you're developing a web app, maybe might be of importance to you.
Yep. I think you're a few hours ahead of me checking out that SDK, but it's on my list.
Andrew Grummet, I have to say, I only stopped smoking weed about a year and a half ago, so a lot of the history of podcasting is fuzzy for me. Particularly those early days when I was in the castle in Belgium and tinkering around. Tell me when we first got on each other's radar.
Oh, man. So maybe it was BloggerCon, right? 2003.
Mm. Was that? Where was that blog? I remember it was in California?
No, it was
Harvard. Cambridge, yeah. Right.
I want to say that's where we met.
And do you remember the meeting?
It's probably coming out of one of those, panel sessions or something, and I wrote about this on one of the posts on social, but I don't know, something like within the first 60 seconds, we were talking about enclosures and RSS. And wasn't that super groovy? And you said, oh, but with a little Apple script, you can, download it overnight and sync it immediately to the device. And, I think, this was before the iPhone, right? I can't remember if it was you or Dave Weiner, but someone called it the click wait system, right? That was kind of the problem. So you would click to download and an hour later.
Yeah, no experience.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So
was this 2005?
No, 2003. No. 2003.
This was 2003. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And my mind was blown because, I think enclosures have been around since 2000, maybe?
Yeah. Yes, 2000. Dave and I were sending 100 megabyte QuickTime movies to each other through Radio Userland. And that was the extent of it.
Right.
It was basically a movie of the Grateful Dead that he would send, playing some Grateful Dead song. And I'd probably send some porn movie back. I can't remember back in the day. That's all we had. And then once Napster came out, it would be a song or something. And I remember that when I saw my first iPod, I'm like, radio receiver. Perfect. And that's when I started tinkering with the script. So then what happened? So after BloggerCon, how did you find me? How did we connect? Because I don't really remember all the people who showed up anymore. I remember the guys from Australia with iPodder X, I want to say. You had iPodder Lemon.
Right.
I was building the directory with OPML. Yeah.
There was probably a good year in there of just kind of messing around and, connecting by, on mail lists. And I think Yahoo had a mail list system. And like some of those mails I still have in my inbox were from iPodder-dev.
Yeah.
Right?
No. Oh, man. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But we were working with different people. The iPodder X guys, I think, were in Canada, right? That's Ray, August and Ray.
Ray. Yeah. Oh, it's Canada? Okay.
Yeah. I still trade emails with Ray a bit, Ray Slikinski.
Now, what were you doing at the time? Where were you working?
Yeah. So this was there was kind of a stretch after, remember the Web 1.0 boom and bust?
Yes, right? Yes. So,
fondly.
In the wake of that bust, I was consulting. Like, I kind of go back and forth between, you know, real jobs and kind of messing around. So this was all side project stuff while I was consulting, you know, to pay the bills.
What were you coding in at that time?
For iPodder or generally?
Generally, yeah.
Oh, you're going to like this. So we were using, like, professionally for, I don't know, a 3 or 4 year stretch, we were using TCL, Tickle.
Right? Oh, God.
Anybody remember that?
Now, yeah, that's old Unix, man.
There's actually good reasons. You know, there was, if you remember TCLTK. If you remember CGI Bin, that was kind of state of the art back then.
Yes. Hey, but, go to my website, domainname.com/CGI-bin/script.
And, I mean, the way that would work is, you know, you'd make a call to the web server. You know, the web server would kick off a Unix process from scratch, and that would run your thing. Mm-hmm. And so there were these guys in the, I don't know, mid-90s. Called Navisoft, and they were like, hey, this Tickle language is really great. You know, it's embeddable. It's got this nice clean syntax, and they built a web server around it. And what they would do is preload a bunch of, you know, sort of clean Tickle interpreters, and those could all be run, you know, within the same process. So, I mean, it's all stuff we take for granted now, but they had sort of done it, you know, really early. And so I worked for a few years at a company where we would build out websites, you know, dynamic websites that ran Tickle in the web server and Oracle databases on the back end.
Wow.
And I don't remember TCL from web stuff. I remember it as the GUI, way you did GUI.
That's right. That was the TK part.
Yeah, TK. Yeah, TK. Yeah, TCL. Yeah. TK was like, you know, your GUI programming on
a GUI kit.
Mm-hmm. So this was like a lesser known use of the scripting language, but one that, you know, it was a great base to build on for a few years there.
TCL.
I remember we were all Mac based, and then you came in and you started building the Windows Podcatcher, as we called them.
Yeah.
And that was iPod. Now, was it just you, or were there other people who were in your team?
No, it was, so the early group, it was actually, there was this company in I don't know if it was Amsterdam or Rotterdam, but there was, you know, in the Netherlands, there was these guys called Activate. A few of them were sort of, you know, this wasn't a super structured thing, right? A bunch of us just came together on iPod or Dev, but they contributed a few guys. And it was me. And so, Martin, Eric.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember Martin.
I remember Martin. Yeah.
Yeah. Martin Fenroy and Eric de Jong. So it was me and those guys, and there was a guy, Peritza. I had to go look this all up. and then I want to say Ray was there a little bit, but then he peeled off to do iPodder X.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, we had a guy from Australia, Garth Kidd, came in. And
Garth made
all the BitTorrent stuff work, which was really cool.
Right.
But, the kind of genesis of it for me was I was watching all this stuff going on, and, you know, you had done some scripting, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were guys who were interested in making it work on, you know, Mac OS.
Adam did some scripting this past week.
Hey.
It's what I do.
All right. But, I want to say a lot of the work was on Mac, and, you know, Mac was kind of the groovy thing back then. I don't know. There was sort of the new hotness where all the developers were paying attention, but it was still a really low percentage of the market share. I went and looked it up. It was something like 5%. So I really was interested in, hey, can we make this work well in Windows? And we actually wound up using cross-platform, you know, windowing tech and Python, and, you know, eventually built something that worked on Windows, Mac, and Linux. But you know, my focus was making sure not just that it worked on Windows, but that it had a GUI, you know, had a nice installer, like a click, click, click installer.
Yeah. What was the Windows installer that we all used at the time?
What was it? Nullsoft was one of them. Right?
Yeah, those guys are great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we used, right? I sort of had zero interest in downloading, what do you call it?
Executables?
No. Actually, I was thinking about the, like, Microsoft, even though I wanted it to work on Windows, it was sort of by no means a kind of Microsoft programmer. And so I wanted to have nothing to do with, you know, Visual Studio, and which is kind of funny now because VS Code is what everybody uses. But there was this whole developer license thing you had to buy from Microsoft for like $1,000.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I found this thing from these Nullsoft guys, right? Which was just, you know, write a few lines of code and bam, you have a Windows installer. So that's what we need. That's for us.
I want to say that there was some, and I'm trying to remember if I'm remembering this right, but there was something that was an installer kit that came out like a spun off from the Winamp guys.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, right? It's called NSYS.
Was that Nullsoft?
Yeah,
Nullsoft. Yeah, that came out of LlamaSoft, right? Okay.
Yeah. Nullsoft scriptable installer system. It's still around.
NSYS. I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how we built the installers. I think for Mac, it was, you know, it was much simpler. I think there was just like a, you know, you make a DMG or something like that.
Mount the DMG.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, man.
Yeah. But that was really what got me involved was also a scratch. Remember that expression, open source is for scratching, you know, your own itch. I was always interested in listening to, you know, audio time in a time shifted way. I think sometime in the late 90s, like, remember Real Audio, those streams?
Yeah, of course.
It was kind of this protected thing. And I really liked this radio program called This American Life, right? But you had to be sort of listening to it on the weekend at the right time. And then it was an hour long and maybe you were doing a 10-minute car ride or something. And so, somebody had created this. It was probably not totally on the level, but there was this software you could use to download and kind of burn.
Yeah, you could rip
the Real Audio stream. Yeah. So I used to burn those things to disk for long car rides. So I kind of was doing it. Some version of, hey, can we take this thing from the internet and time shift it for when it works for the listener? So when I met Adam, when RSS was really heating up and enclosures were starting to get adoption, it was sort of like this. It was the set of tech that I had been waiting for to solve a problem.
Some of the early things I remember, one was there was this huge ongoing conversation, which I think might have ultimately led to the creation of Atom, Atom feeds, and it was about the show notes, and there were just developers yelling at me like, where are you going to put your show notes? Because I'd come up with the concept of show notes.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'll just put it here in the description. Then there was like this, well, we need a show notes tag. And Weiner was like, nope. Yeah. Go ahead, do a namespace. And then the Atom guys came in. I don't even know where. There was a lot of confusion. I really didn't know what was going on. I'm just like, it's working. I'm doing a podcast. That's all. A little bundle of joy, as we called it then.
Yeah. No, it was contentious. I still, you know, today I remember it being contentious more than I remember the details of, you know, what everybody was fighting about.
I remember cool stuff, like stuff that we discovered kind of on the fly. And here's the one I remember the best, and I don't remember what app it was, but we figured out it was probably not a good idea when you subscribe to a feed that had already existed for a while to then download all the episodes right away.
Yep. I'm not, you can't see me, but I'm not nodding my head. Yep.
Because back in the day, I mean, I was putting stuff on my Mac drive.
Yeah.
Or .Mac, I guess it was what it was called or whatever. Yeah. And it was a nightmare because there was no bandwidth and it was just, you know, you'd crush it trying to download 20 episodes all in one go. I mean, what do you remember any other things that we learned that were kind of like that, the early best practices?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a thing. And because, again, you know, it was about downloading, whereas today our network connections are so fast that that's just not even a conversation. But I think another big one in that same bucket was resumable downloads, right?
Oh, yes. So yes.
Maybe you downloaded half and then something bailed out and there was some kind of header somebody had to set. Maybe it's the range header. So we started keeping track of like, okay, we've downloaded this many bytes so that if we needed a resume, we could just issue a range request to get the rest.
Wow.
It's amazing how long it took the range request idea to like become fully fleshed out and functional across most of the web. Mm. I mean, there's still parts of the web that range requests still don't work to this day. Yeah. I mean, like it took way too long for that to actually gain traction.
One thing I'm still mysterious to me is, you know, when we put, you know, these, you know, links up that start playing some audio file midstream, you know, you're doing like a clip. And I assume that's a range request, but somewhere maybe it's the client figures it out, but somebody's got to kind of figure out, you know, what the timeline offset, how that maps to the number of bytes. Which I don't know for stuff that's, you know, a constant encoding rate, that's pretty straightforward, but
variables all over the map though.
It seems to mostly work, which I'm surprised at, and I don't really know how it works, but.
Does it actually work, or do we give it so much mental leniency without realizing it?
It's possible that a
30-second or minute swing one way or the other, we don't really notice.
Yeah, it's maybe the browser's just doing a lot of work and the network connections are fast. I hope not, but
what is the one thing I was curious about is if you go back to enclosures started to happen 2000, 2001. At what point did it become, and it was all radio user land stuff, but then what was the first sort of big adopter where y'all were like, yes, awesome. They're putting the enclosure tag in their feeds.
I'm going to say it was WGBH in Boston. Tony Khan is what I think.
Oh, good call out. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
There's a guy at NPR station, WGBH in Boston, Tony Khan. And he somehow came into the community and he's like, this is civility. He's like, this is fantastic. You guys are onto something big. And I think he put some of the first GBH programs on podcasting. And the BBC came in pretty quick too, actually. They started doing stuff. They started experimenting.
What year was that, do you think?
2004, 5, around there, I'm going to say.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those kind of, you know, bootstrap, boot up cycles where we had to get the software out and, you know, Adam started Daily Source Code, you know, so that there was content to develop against. Sorry, Adam. No. I said content.
At least you didn't call me a creator.
Yeah, sorry. But you know, we kind of had to like boot it up in cycles to the point where where folks like Tony Khan would see it and see there was a distribution channel there and that he could reach people in a new way. And there was also Christopher Lydon, he had had some kind of fallout with the radio, right? Which I think,
yeah, he got fired.
WBUR. He was also one of those folks I used to listen to on WBUR all the time, and then he showed up at Berkman, and I think at the BloggerCon. I was actually handing out discs, you know, CDs of the recorded interviews that he had done with Dave Weiner that Dave had distributed to essentially, you know, radio user land users.
Yep.
And anybody else that could support enclosures. But just to kind of like turn, you know, get more out into those conversations out into people's hands. I think I was handing out CDs at BloggerCon.
CDs. That's funny. Yeah. I think about with podcasting 2.0, you have those sort of hits where you're like, where new people come on board and do an adoption and it's really exciting and it moves the needle a lot within the project, you know, and it's like, you know, this person adopted the transcript tag, this person adopted the chapters tag this person, you know, you have all these sort of like milestone markers. Do you remember any more of those where everybody in the iPodder community got super jazzed?
I mean, the one that sticks out, of course, was, you know, Apple releasing the feature. I mean, obviously as we were sort of ambivalent about it as app builders, because I was going to kind of suck all the oxygen out of that effort, but it was also it was also kind of a, you know, it was an affirmation that this is a great idea, and you know, we can.
This is where people started to hate me. No, it's true.
With the Apple thing?
Yeah, for two reasons. One, because I had brought in the evil beast. And I think probably one of the biggest issues we had was one-click subscribe, because back in the day it was, go to my website, look for the RSS icon, right-click, copy, then go to your podcatcher, hit add feed, and then paste it in, and you're good to go. Do you think wallets are a problem now? Think about that.
Yeah, that was a huge issue.
And and so Apple came in and they created one-click subscribe because they could, because they had, you know, they had the whole thing, because they basically, because they had the index, they had the database, which I was running iPodder.org, which was a world outline of OPML files, which was actually pretty cool. But it didn't at all. There was no infrastructure for, you know, it wasn't, it really centralized it in a way, of course. And, I learned a lot from this period, actually, because what happened was, I became the face, and I was going around and people say, yeah, you invented podcasting. And I was like, yeah, it's cool. And, a lot of people didn't like that. And I really forgot to honor the people that actually did the work. And I was just, I was young. And I was stoned.
You were young and naive.
I was stoned. And I was just happy to move it forward. You know, I was just happy to move it. And I know Dave Weiner got very, very, very angry. He's probably still angry. Maybe not. I don't know. But I think that's kind of where some animosity came about. I don't know if you ever felt that, Andrew, but if you did, I'm sorry.
No, not at all. I think that, I think you led something, right? Like these things don't just sort of happen. Someone's got to lead. And I think you did that. You know, sometimes I look at things like Wikipedia and, you know, you look at the story, and if you live the story, you're like, well, that's not quite how it happened
at all. Oh, and that was the best part. That was the best part, because there was this history of podcasting, and I was like, no, that's not how it happened. I was there. So I went in and changed it. And then all of a sudden people are like, you changed it to make your role bigger. I'm like, no, I just, and I didn't know that you're not supposed to change anything in Wikipedia that you're a part of.
Yeah.
So I had no idea about that culture.
I want to say there was some kind of, you know, no moment where somebody like did the screenshot of the IP address.
Rogers Cadenhead.
Oh, geez.
That's who did that. Then he just wrote these horrible, horrible blog posts about me. It humbled me, though. I'll tell you that. Yeah. It humbled me.
Well, so at what point did you start to work? Like, so at some point, Adam, you hired Andrew.
Yeah. So Steve Jobs called, and I mean, or Eddie Q actually, and says, do you want to meet with Steve? So I had that 1 hour meeting with Steve, which was mind blowing, of course. And then I had one email exchange with him afterwards. And he said, I think your idea, listen to this, everybody pay attention. I think your idea of advertising on podcasts is a good one. And I'm connecting you with Kleiner Perkins and some other venture capital guys I know. I think you should try and go for that. And that was the last contact I had with him. And then I called Ron Bloom, and who I had done Think New Ideas with. And then we went out and we raised money from Kleiner and Sequoia and Sherpalo and a couple other, you know, high end VC firms. Now that's where it all kind of, there was a lot of things wrong with that. Another big learning moment for me, but you know, they were like, no, you have to be in San Francisco. I was living in London at the time. No, we've got to have the office in San Francisco. It's the antithesis of a cool hip media company is to be in San Francisco. And, but we had to do that. And Andrew, I think you were employee number one.
I don't know if I was, I mean, it was early for sure. I was in Boston, right? And you were in London and we started talking and working together on things as early as like the summer. Right.
And what year was this?
It's 2005, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think I just had a, you know, my family had just grown by one.
Yes.
And Adam's like, hey, we're doing this thing in San Francisco.
Move. You know, I'm like, didn't you move out by yourself for a while first?
I did. Yeah. I did. Yeah. I was hopping back and forth for a few months or a month or two. But eventually we got everybody out to San Francisco. And there we had a little office on
Second Street.
Yeah, but there was one even earlier than that. It was on...
Oh, goodness, we had that little basement place.
Yeah, it wasn't Brannan. It was like, it's another B Street a couple blocks over. Yeah. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
But there was probably no more than 15 people in that building. It was very, it was early days for the company, for sure.
15 people, and how many of those were in sales?
None. I think none. None. No, we had podcaster relations, which was the job you really didn't want. So what we did is we went out and we got all the cool people at the time, Dawn and Drew, Michael Butler, Callie Lewis.
Forget about him.
Madge Weinstein, the bloated lesbian. And we set them all up. We kind of ran it like a record company, but fair. We set them all up with LLCs and we gave them an advance and we paid them on a regular basis, you know, guaranteed income. And then we went out and tried to sell. And, I did that most of that trying to sell. And, there's a lot of things we did technically, which I want Andrew to talk about, but what it really came down to at a certain point was discount codes. So we figured out the discount codes were a great way to make money because the brand guys, I mean, even then, I remember BMW. Somehow BMW ran on Madge Weinstein's Bloated Lesbian podcast and they cut us off and the agency cut us off. No more brand. It's not brand safe.
To be on a podcast by a lesbian.
Yeah. A bloated lesbian, which was really a dude, which is even funnier. And then we got, I think GoDaddy, probably the first one. Because GoDaddy was just exploding. And if you use their discount code, then you'd get a nice VIG for it. And that was how podcasters were making money to offset, you know, so we could recoup off of what we had given them up front. But pretty quickly, it turned out to be just an SEO game. Because all you really need to do is make sure that if someone typed in, you know, GoDaddy discount code, that yours popped to the top. So everyone... But they were doing podcasts, but people weren't getting the codes from the podcast. They were getting it from Google search. And it really became scammy at that point. And then, of course, YouTube came in and then we had to, you got to do video. For my money, it was just all downhill from there. And at a certain point, it's just like, look, we're trying to create content as cheaply as possible. And then, put ads all over it. It was horrible. But we did some cool stuff. I saw you post about the golden ticket.
Yeah. I thought it might be fun to talk about that.
Go for it.
Yeah. So first an apology, right? Because that whole tech was built on dynamic ad insertion, right? So like, I don't know, somewhere.
2006, we were inserting ads, people.
Yeah. Yeah. It was... I remember having to dig around and, you know, through the MP3 spec, and I built a system that pretty much lets you do everything on the fly. We weren't doing mid rolls. Like we didn't sort of have, you know, enough processing power to figure out, you know, topic changes or gaps in audio or anything, but pre-roll and post-roll was pretty easy to do even back then. And so we had a system where you could, you know, upload your ads, you know, into essentially like an ad server. If I don't know, there was all kinds of banner ad server tech floating around back then. Yeah. And so we modded one of those to allow you to upload audio assets, and then you provision it with, you know, what's the terminology, like the number of impressions for the run or something, and the timing, and, you know, you could schedule it. And we had a way to say, okay, this is a pre-roll and this is a post-roll.
Yeah, like for the ad campaign or whatever. Yeah.
So we were doing dynamic ad insertion back then. Apologies retroactively.
What was the tech stack for this, Andrew? Like, how were you doing these insertions?
I wrote it. I mean, the ad server stuff was all open. It was called like Open Ads or something. I think later they became OpenX, but it was this open source banner ad server thing that knew about banners, and so I kind of hijacked that to do our audio. And, I think people had figured out, like, for certain conditions, you know, you can just sort of concatenate the audio, but you have to separate out the tags, and you've got to match the encoding rates and, you know, stuff like that.
As long as you break it on a frame boundary and like put it, yeah.
Well, we weren't doing mid rolls either. Right. So all you needed to be able to do was break off the ID3 tags, sense the encoding rate, and this was fun. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it's going to get a little nerdy. But
go for it.
I think what we figured out, or what I figured out, was that you didn't, because this was all the audio was being uploaded by the podcaster. So a priori, you didn't know what encoding rates they were going to use, and we didn't like restrict them or tell them, you know, reject files if they were the wrong rate. But the ads themselves were really short. And so what we did was just grind over each ad asset and encode it in all the different rates. And then on the fly, when the ad request came in, we would say, okay, like we've already saved the metadata for the podcast. You know, we've broken it apart into pieces. And on the fly, we would assemble the ID3 tags, the ad with the matching encoding rate, the audio file, and then the post-roll. And then we didn't even save all that because it would have been a lot of space on our, you know, on our hard drives. Remember, we weren't at the beginning of the company. There was no, we weren't doing cloud.
Right.
I think we even started before Amazon offered S3. So just so that we weren't getting swamped with kind of storage, we would write the finished file directly to the CDN. Right. So the CDN is where, you know, that final file would actually appear for the first time. And then, you know, if the same ad ID was requested again, which, you know, if you're doing thousands or millions of impressions, that's fine. Let's see.
So at some point, Adam, was this Akamai? Was that the CDN?
I think it was Limelight. If you look at the
Limelight
thing I posted,
yeah,
right?
Limelight. Yeah.
But, you know, they never came back and screamed at us for using too much of their space. So I think we managed that okay. But Adam comes to me one day, I'm pretty sure. Tell me if I get this wrong, Adam.
That sounds right.
Hey, can we use that system to do a golden ticket? Which is, you know, if you've seen, you know, the chocolate factory, Willy Wonka, right? The idea was that we were going to put, I think we wound up being a post roll, but we were going to put some special audio in exactly one download, right? So in other words, if everybody was set their subscriptions and they were getting, you know, the downloads overnight. And so if you were subscribed to a certain podcast, maybe it was Daily Source Code. I can't remember, but it was, you know,
we actually sold it at one point. The whole idea was you could do a contest and at random, like, you know, we'd say the one after 1,000 downloads or something, then it would insert this audio.
Yeah.
That would say, and it would be me going, congratulations, you got a golden ticket.
Yeah.
And give you some.
and we actually did this, right? Like, I think the hard parts were, aside from what we talked about already, was we knew people were going to write little scripts and, you know, try to just, you know, keep downloading and that, you know, so I think we wound up, you know, I don't, maybe we like restricted it to a specific time window to try to combat that a little bit. But we did something.
We all know that every download is an actual listen. So, you know, that some, you
know, that's so right, that's, Dave.
I mean, I think there was an element of call and response in that, you know, if nobody had gotten it within a certain, if nobody had, you know, claimed the ticket within a certain amount of time, we'd probably issue another one. But there was an actual action the person who got it had to take, and they did, if I remember correctly. But we sort of didn't know when, you know, there really was a random number generator in there, and we didn't know when the ticket was going to be served, but we coded it in such a way that it would only be served once. Like, there was, even though there was a content distribution network, you know, if you looked at the contents, if you looked at the RSS feed for the show, and the URL we put into the enclosure was not a media file, right? It was a redirector, just like we see all the time now. And that redirector would only issue the winning number, you know, once, so that, you know, it would be served once. And then if somebody got it, they claimed it, you know, you win. And if they didn't, you know, maybe we'd reset and start again.
Now, was this across the whole network or just one show?
I think it was a number of shows, maybe.
Yeah, it was, it was probably a small number of shows, but it was, I think we did it more than once. Yeah. Yeah, but that was wild.
Yeah.
Did anybody win?
Oh, yeah. The I'll just cut to the chase. So I have to go through the whole pod show, which later became Mevio. The VCs were very much in control. Then we had to bring in an Israeli tech guy to run the tech part, which I apologize for. I should have fought much harder. But at that point, I was just running around trying to raise money all the time because we weren't making it. And Eyal was a nice guy. Eyal Shavit.
Yeah.
Remember him?
I remember him. Yeah, absolutely.
And then basically you wound up working for him, which I'm sure was marginally fun.
Oh, it was all right.
Yeah, very, very political of you. Very political. Nice. Nicely done, Andrew. And at a certain point, I just left. I mean, I was going through all kinds of stuff, personal stuff. It was messy.
Yeah.
And then where did you wind up going? Because a lot of people went to Splunk.
Yeah, a lot of people went to Splunk. I think the company was pretty nice to me on the way out. I think, you know, I got some severance and.
We always took care of people.
Yeah. You know, some time to just be available to consult if we needed, the company needed anything. But I kind of floated around for a couple of years. I did consulting. I wound up working for Stitcher for a while as a consultant, right?
Oh, really?
So I don't know if you remember this, but
and
we had made a big move in probably 2011 off of a server farm, like our own, you know, in a colo. Remember colos?
Colos. Yes.
Now known as Compute. Yeah.
Yes.
Compute. Yeah.
We made a big move off of, you know, our own colo into AWS. And so I learned a bunch of stuff about how to do that. And wound up working with Stitcher through the same thing. You know, they were just down the block from you know, Podshow's old office. And I think I cold called the guy and just said, hey, look, I know some stuff about this tech. And, you know, I know some stuff about cloud. If y'all ever needed any help, just give me a ring. And Peter, the founder, you know, the technical founder, you know, pinged me one day. And so I wound up doing some consulting work like that. I did a small startup for a while. You know, doing city guides with a couple people in Berkeley. More consulting. So I sort of go back and forth between consulting and startups. And this was, you know, a consulting phase. Mm-hmm.
Now, was all the tech at Mevio Podshow, was that all? I mean, was that TCL or was that?
No.
Python, okay. If I recall. Was it Python? Yeah.
No, it was PHP.
Oh, PHP, actually,
the dynamic ad insertion stuff was all Python, actually. That was all backend scripts.
Okay.
Except when we assembled and wrote the file to the CDN, that might have been PHP. I'm pretty sure PHP is able to sort of open a connection and do dynamic things if you want, you know, at that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
While PHP Right on.
Yeah. Hey, the podcast index runs on PHP. It's super. If you want to run with scissors and live update your production, that's the language of choice.
That's the way
actually,
to go.
There was this framework that I never got to use in any real way, but called Laravel, that I really thought was nicely done on top of PHP. There's some good stuff there.
So, where are you now? And how many kids do you have now?
I'm in San Francisco. Kind of on the verge of, or maybe now, empty nesting. I have a couple daughters who are, either in school or out of school. Still in San Francisco, where I moved to do Pod Show.
Oh man, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
I want to talk about wherever.audio, your web-based podcast app or framework, I might even call it. Before we do that, I want to take us back for a moment for the song today, which is not on this is not a V for V song. But I'm going to pull it from SoundCloud, which actually it should be V for V, because we also had something at the time called Podcast Music Network, PodSafe Music Network.
Yeah.
And we had a license, and the whole idea was you upload your songs to the PodSafe Music Network, and it was a closed network, so you had to register for it. And as a podcaster, you could come in, you'd agree to the license, which meant that you would put the song with a link to the whatever the artist wanted into your show notes, and then you could play it, and then you'd register if you played it. And actually, a lot of people uploaded their stuff, even some older established artists who owned their catalog again. And we had all the right ideas, Andrew.
Yeah,
we were just a decade too early,
just a little early,
just a little bit early. So, do you remember Cruise Box?
Sounds familiar.
I heard it on a podcast.
Well, I definitely remember that song. Yeah.
Okay, so this is the explicit version. That's the only one I have. I'm going to play that, and we'll be right back after you listen to this. This is going back to mid 2000s.
Way back last summer, when mainstream radio was such a fucking bummer. No indie music, nothing too funny. Clear Channel motherfuckers did it for the money. But somebody heard the call. Now you can have it all. I heard it on a podcast. Rockin' fucking radio. You want it, you got it. Just download it. Tell the FCC to stick it, kick it. The revolution's on. Do you remember your first computer? That piece of shit was like a freaking Roto-Rooter. Now we've got Wi-Fi, downloading files fast, listening to everyone who's ever done a podcast. It's history, now you see each and every nation. Radio has got to go, it's our emancipation. Play that song, sing along, mash it up and mix it. Radio is fucking low till Adam Curry fixed it. Yes, somebody heard the call. We'll be right back.
Blues Box.
Nice.
Man, that was like an anthem back then.
It was. And we have the same vibe now, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
We have a lot of that. That vibe is still there. I love it. I love it a lot. And I'm just realizing now that I didn't balk at the word pod. They pod it. Really? How could I even allow that to happen?
No, that slipped through.
It did.
Is that where it started?
I don't know. But it was good times. And I love that here we are again. And now we have payments and splits and lots of apps. And we're independent. You know, we're not beholden to VC in general. We're not beholden to Apple or anybody. We're rebels.
That's right.
Rebels.
So umbilical.
Oh, yeah.
Is really the heart of what. That's where you're living at, right? I mean, as far as a core goes.
Yeah, yeah. There's sort of three things, but that's really where, you know, I stepped into the social room, because I got interested in, you know, this kind of goes to what Adam was just saying, right? I, like, as a developer, I sort of balk at the idea of having to go ask someone's permission to put some new code into the world. And this, you know, this isn't new, but the app stores, I don't know. I feel like they kind of, I don't know, pulled the wool or something. Like, suddenly everybody thought, well, this is just how you do things. Right. And, it is where the audience is. So I kind of get it, but, I was never quite down with doing app development. I think there's some kindred spirits, in the community. I was listening to
Sam Sethi. Yes, a thrill exactly. Just ran up Sam Sethi's leg right now. You know,
that was just the call out I was about to do. I was listening to him, and I was listening to Sam talk about it, and I like instantly like, "Amen, brother!" And boost. You know,
yeah.
So that's kind of where I was coming from, and I started thinking, all right, well, look, browsers have an audio tag, right? Browsers can play audio, and you know. I was thinking, okay, well, how do I get RSS feeds in? Maybe I'll write some kind of server-based thing that parses the RSS and returns JSON and, you know, mess around with that for a while. And then I thought, wait a second, like, you can put a parser in a browser. Like, parsers, remember Ajax?
Right? Yeah,
parsers, no XML. Ajax.
Wow, stuff is moving on the screen.
let me stop you real quick. Everybody who has gone through, like, everybody who's a web developer has gone through this thing when they get into RSS and you're like, I'll just build it all in the browser. And then you start building, you start writing stuff. And then all of a sudden it dawns on you, same origin policy.
Well, that
is going to kill you. And you're like, oh crap. It was such a good idea.
Right. Well, that's the setup really is umbilical was, okay, there are certain things we just can't do on the browser. If you want to pull an RSS feed from some other domain and they haven't set CORS headers, you're dead. And I know this one's controversial, right? But if you are serving your browser application from HTTPS and the feed is on HTTP, you know, most browsers today will refuse to pull it. Mixed content. And so I started thinking, look, I don't want to give up on this idea of being able to do everything in the browser. But, and this was I think my first post on podcastindex.social was, hey, look, if we can't eliminate the server completely, let's just make it, you know, open source, cheap, you know, anyone can run it. And let's just put as little as possible into the server side, right? Let's just make it as minimal as possible. It won't have any state that with an asterisk, we can talk about that, but you know, you won't log in and have an account there. Its only purpose in life is just to kind of bridge the gap or be your lifeline or umbilical cord. I'm not a branding guy, but
I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was the idea. Yeah. And, so I started there
So you're saying, you know, your idea is like, just make it where I can just run it on a $5 a month Linux and be done with it.
Yeah. And yeah, I think I even put some code in the project that shows you how to do that with, you can run it for free. Like there's a few different, this gets a little in the weeds, but there's a few different ways you can run something like this. Like you can run it as an edge worker whose only job is to fix the, the cores and mixed content issues. And then it's pretty much free. I mean, I think Dino lets you run Dino workers for free, and Cloudflare, it's cheap, if not free. That gets you part of the way there. If you want to do stuff, and this was all like later learning for me, once I hopped on into the community and started learning about how all the other sort of tags work. If you want to do stuff like offline web push notification, you have to be running all the time. And slurping down John Spurlock's, Podping feed. I mean, unless you want to run a Hive node yourself or something, but, for that, you need to be running all the time. And that is $5 a month. You know, the low, low price of $5 a month, you can have an always on server with DigitalOcean, and you can basically serve as a relay, for your users who want offline notifications.
That's a big deal. It's a big deal that you've done this, because things like this. I see things like umbilical the same way I see bridges that like the ActivityPub bridge and things like that, where you're taking you're trying, bridging one thing to another is a way to get developers that are over here to have access to a world that you're trying to get them access to, because there's tons of web developers out there who are really good at web, but they're just no good at running servers. Yep. And when you can make all of that sort of simplified for them, it makes it, you open yourself up. You open the whole world up to lots of new developers that can do cool stuff that they couldn't otherwise do.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, that's just a piece of the puzzle, but that, being able to kind of make fully what PWA is, what I guess we say, but being able to make these sort of PWA players not have to depend on a central system, right? Because at the end of the day, this is kind of like, I was trying to think of like, what's a good metaphor for what Wherever tries to do, or any other consumer of Umbilical. And it's really like a non-custodial podcast app, right? It's like everything you do is in your browser, and not just like your browser. Once you log into Google, it's that browser, which means you want to test stuff or mess around or listen to something and immediately throw away the history of what you listen to. You can do it in incognito mode, right? Like, browsers are amazing today. I don't know if people dig around in them, but they're incredibly capable. You can build a fully capable app, with the exception of these umbilical use cases, browser side. And so, you basically have everything you need. You can kind of run the developer tools and watch the network traffic, and you'll see that the only connections out are, to the podcasting systems, to kind of like the Wherever domain, just to check for updates. Or if you're using Umbilical to do things like cores and whatnot, it'll reach out to that for proxying. But, there's no phoning home. There's sort of no extraneous traffic on the network. It's completely isolated.
Where do you want to see this go? I mean, is this pure altruism? Is it just for yourself? I mean, obviously, it's like I see it as a framework, because, there's not a lot of design in it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like a really good question. It sort of serves a few purposes. One is, for me, it's like going to the gym for programming. So it's just kind of a way to learn new things. And
some guys go to Pornhub. Some guys go to the gym. Andrew builds cores apps.
It's true. But I also, it's my daily driver. I listen to it. It's obviously really easily and cheaply shareable, because it just downloads as a static, it's just a bunch of static files that download. So, I'm not about to open a customer service and a sales team and all of that stuff, but, it works. It's there. Why not put it out there?
So are you going to check out the Greenlight API?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love you, man.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah, for sure. No,
the settings page on wherever.audio just cracks me up.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's like, who do you want as your search provider? I'm like, I don't know.
There's a URL in there. I'm like, what the?
Yeah.
Are all these strings?
Yeah. Well, so the idea was, and some of that definitely needs cleaning up, but the idea was, if anybody could, just like with the Fediverse and Mastodon, right? Like, Mastodon is a thing that many people install, and you know, people go to different Mastodons. So here, if a bunch of people installed Umbilical then, and they wanted to use Wherever, they could point at that one. You know, where you can, I think I've invited people on the social to ping me. I created like a link, a way to create a link where if I just send you that link and you click it, it'll pre-populate all the fields. So you don't have to mess with it. Right. That's kind of where that is. One thing I wanted to call out was the other piece of all this is, you know, if you kind of my vision for all this stuff is that it's open and it's distributed and you can't go shut it down. And I think that the GUID, it became really clear to me early on that the podcast 2.0 GUIDs would play an important role in this. And so that's kind of was the genesis of the lookup service, right? Which is, that's what is it? Lookup.wherever.audio. But it's really just, you know, a subset of what you're building in the podcast index. And the idea there was just, again, with cores or developer secrets, I didn't want that to get in the way of people using the GUIDs. Because if you throw a GUID into your listen link or whatever kind of archival link you want to share out to the world, and you know, if the podcaster changes hosts, that we can use that GUID to look up what their current URL for their feed is, and then you can publish out these sort of durable links. And we're not relying on, at the end of the day, this goes back to like, if you look at, you know, any of the links you'll click off of Episodes FM, you know, a lot of them have system specific identifiers in them, which, you know, it's cool. Like it solves a problem, but I was hoping to not have to do that because the whole vibe of Wherever is just, and Umbilical is just that it's distributed, right? There's no flex point to shut things down from.
I find this is the case with a lot of things that we open source. I don't know what your thoughts are, but you have a vision of a way. Let me say it this way: you get into a mindset where everything's going to be open. After a while of doing things, of developing that way, that's just the way you think. You're like, okay, I'm doing this, and it's going to be usable by many people, so everybody needs to be able to run it themselves. And so you just sort of always build in that mode. And then, but there's this other sort of counterbalance where people don't necessarily get on board. They just use the thing that you built on your own system, and they don't run it themselves. So I'm thinking about things like, the ActivityPub bridge from Podcast Index. I mean, you could go and download that right now and run it on your own system. Anybody can, but the likelihood of somebody doing that is realistically very tiny. They're just going to use the one that we're running. And when you're talking about GUIDs, it reminded me of this, that, you know, the whole idea of GUIDs is that everybody keeps these databases of GUIDs. Everybody reads them. So nobody needs to do a quote unquote GUID lookup from some central repository, because the GUIDs are just all there for us all to see all the time. We all need to have databases of GUIDs, but I don't see
honey, we need a database of GUIDs.
Yeah.
Write that down.
Actually, I guess I kind of realized that later is a lot of the companies are just running syncs behind the scenes and working from their own copy, right?
Yeah, and I wish, you know, because I don't want us to become, and this has always been the difficulty with podcasting index, is that we want everybody else to do these things too. We don't want, you know, I don't want to become the thing that everybody depends on for makes looking sense. Up data, you know, but you can't force that. I mean, it has to be an organic thing, but a lot of times it just doesn't evolve that way.
I definitely appreciate the, you know, the algo or whatever that you use to create the GUID is just based on, you know, what is the first URL you encounter for that feed. You know, maybe we could come up with some way to allow those updates to be broadcast, right? Like right now, I think, you know, the podcast index is authoritative, essentially. We treat it as authoritative for keeping track of, you know, those GUID updates.
Damn right.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. But maybe it doesn't have to be. I mean, if that's what you're talking about.
Eventually, no. Eventually, it has to be just a thing that's out there that exists.
I mean, right now, the Resolver system I built, you know, it just pulls the weekly exports, right? But that's an S3 bucket now, right? It can live forever if we want, you know, or effective for our purposes forever. We can, you know, export out copies of the S3 bucket. I think there's a way to do that if you want to spend the money.
I would like to do that. I would like to start exporting this stuff out through. And eventually, you know, I've got.
Don't you just want that on the Fediverse, Dave?
On the Fediverse, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Can't that be an activity pub and you just look it up and it just shows up somehow?
It just all works.
It actually. It feels more like a blockchain kind of thing to me, actually, right? Like the podcaster, broadcasts a new URL whenever they change, you know, hosts, and that there's some, you know, historical, unmutable history of it. Mm-hmm.
But that was one of the
make
things.
Make it an ordinal. Make it an ordinal.
An ordinal. God. A rune.
A rune.
That was one of the original, like, we had some, like, for lack of a better term, verbs that we wanted to use in Podping, you know, for update, live end, and that kind of thing. And change was one of the ones that we discussed a lot was, you know, okay, feed change. This show moved from this host to this other host. You know, there's a spamminess problem that you like a fraud issue that you would have to overcome, and you'd have to say, okay, well, we're not going to trust anything that's not coming from these sources. And so that, I think that kind of put a damper on it, but I agree totally with that thought. That would be such a killer use case, because then you could see that come through and you're like, okay, well, this is authoritative. This is the thing, you know, well, now we all just update our feeds and we're done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it'd be good. Yeah. It'd be good not to have to pull from the central source, but I did want to say something about the green light. I think the thing that made Albie really easy to do, like, you know, Wherever doesn't have streaming payments, but Boost was pretty straightforward because it's all familiar tech for a web dev, right? You know, you do an OAuth sign in, you make some REST calls, you know, boom, you've boosted. And I think that was a big contribution to kind of abstract out. I think you already talked about this earlier, right? But to abstract out nodes and payment channels and those kind of things. And it looks like, from what I've seen, that Greenlight does all of that too. There's some kind of object model, you know, behind it, right? Like, you have Bitcoin node, you have Lightning node, you have payment channels, you have wallets, and that's all a little gray. But maybe you don't need to know about it to be able to consume it. And, you know, it looks like the Greenlight could be done in a web app. I think that it uses gRPC, which, you know, that's fine. And I think it's all, you know, your secrets, which means, you know, they could be put in a browser storage. So it looks like it should be doable, but, you know, it's obviously like many, many hours later before you. It sounds like Adam's already.
I know. I make it CLI, sound right? So easy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's easy. Just put
he ran
calls.
The command.
Yeah. Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah, I ran the command. I
totally feel the you know, not wanting to be, you know, bound up. And the whole vibe of all the stuff I've been working on is, hey, let's not try to be like tied up with any one sort of system or provider or
decouple.
Yeah.
I think that's a big deal. And I mean, other. I don't know if there's any other apps running on Umbilical, but I mean, any aspiring web podcasting app can grab that and start going right now. I mean, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of hard to tell the story of why it's this way. Right. I think most people just would love to get users who don't care about how any of this works, you know? So I there's a deliberate choice here in trying to build something that achieves certain goals, you know, above sort of, hey, how do I get the largest number of people onto my system? But, yeah, I'd love to hear from people if they want to mess with it and try it out.
What are you doing now, Andrew? Do you have a job?
I do. I do. Yeah. I don't want to sort of talk about it too much, but I work a day job, let's just say. It's pretty interesting, pretty far out stuff.
The CIA doesn't like it when you talk about it. Yeah. Oh, Wow, that's so obvious. Oh man, let me see if I can play the jingle here.
A spot the spook. Spot the spook. Everybody wants to spot the spook.
Yes, yeah. That's it. That's it.
Uh-huh.
I noticed you don't have a Wikipedia.
Yeah,
there, Andrew,
yeah,
which
exactly.
Is very suspicious.
Yes, yes.
Or
right.
Business card. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I will say, you know, I run a software team, and
oh, nice.
You know, a lot of what I do there is sort of, you know, direction setting and people work, and kind of going back to that thing about the gym.
Hey, right? Look at, like, this picture. What's in your mouth?
Yeah.
People work. Yeah.
Wet work. That's what he's up to.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but so you're a developer with soft skills. That's
right. That's
plus.
Right. But yeah, this helps me keep my skills sharp, and a lot of it transfers over. And so, you know, I learned about things that I wind up using in the day job, and yeah.
I am so delighted that you came on today, Andrew. It's so fun to reconnect and just remember some of the things, but also, man, I've said this before. I so appreciate that you came into the community and just throwing your stuff in there. I love that, man. It's really,
it's
really cool.
Oh man, it's a great community. Yeah. I get a real sort of like a hit of just, I don't know, enjoyment of seeing everybody on the community and what everyone's doing. And, you know, some folks have been really, really nice. I think Dovidas was like the first person to send me a V4V payment for something. That was just so cool. Right? I think it was because of him that I opened that Albi wallet, right? He's like,
cool.
Where can I send you? And I was like, I guess I should open a wallet.
Yeah. But this really is a great community. People are just really chill and cool. 90% of the time. Yeah.
Yeah,
90% of the time.
91.
Yeah, maybe 90. Yeah, something. Yeah, there's a range. Yeah. It's a range.
Yes. It's a range.
Dynamic.
But it's mutual. I mean, yeah, all this cool stuff and interesting people. So thank you for that.
Shall we thank some people here, Dave?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I have some live boosts that have been coming in. Dreb Scott with 23456. Nice, Dreb. Yeah, Dreb Scott, man. Another one of those heroes of podcasting 2.0. He says, right now I have a boring work meeting in my left ear and the boardroom in the right ear. Continuing my podcasting by osmosis journey as I help my wife launch her new show. A humble thank you to all of those who have helped and continue to help me learn Go Podcasting. I want to know what is said show. I want to hear the
Mrs.
show.
Mrs. Wayne. Yeah. The Mrs. Wayne show.
Mrs. Wayne show. 333 from Salty Crayon. He says, P.S. Getting low on our Boostagram ball fix. Did producer Tina give you any time slots? Yes, she has me she has me doing all kinds of stuff. Every day it's like, hey, Saturday. And then all of a sudden I was like, well, I guess I won't be doing Boostagram ball. Okay.
Can you pencil me in, babe?
Yeah, no, it's hard. 1234 from Dreb Scott. Thank you, Dreb. Here's the... Salty Crayon 1182. Howdy Boardroom was going to say something about the Noster Bros, but after hearing Dave sound down about the infrastructure, decided to cheer him up with some Doomhole donation. In the pipe, Go Podcasting. Doomhole donation. Oh. Dreb Scott 775. Money transmitter go brrr. Okay. The Tone Wrecker 3333. Excellent knowledge share at the beginning of the episode today, reviewing part of the stack with Lightning payments and integration options. Yes. Thank you. Dreb with another 775. He says, just be careful while you let your dongle dangle. That's for you, Andrew. don't dangle your dongle everywhere.
Roger that.
Pre-show test boost from Dreb, 777. Another test from Chad, F333. And that's what we have so far for the live boost. Dave, what do you got on your list?
Got Chris. Chris Last from Jupiter Broadcast. We got some boost grams here. Oh, wait. I'm wrong. We have a,
by the way, I love Chris's podcast, This Week in Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I love that podcast. That's great.
I almost messed up and did not read Oscar Mary, $200.
Go Podcasting!
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blaze, nice. On the Impala.
Thank you. Very nice, Oscar. Appreciate it.
Let us know if Fountain can do through Zebedee Bolt 12, Oscar.
Yes, please. Yes, let us know.
We've got some boosts. We got Chris from Jupiter Broadcasting, 50,000 sats. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate that, brother. He says, I adore you both. But some of your Nostra take is really bad.
Oh.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. We don't need a Twitter clone, but you're getting distracted by its least useful implementation. I was skeptical at first, too, but having a front row seat to what the Fountain team is building for their future releases has demonstrated to me it solves problems. Things like Nostra Wallet Connect could very likely be useful to Podcasting 2.0 in the future. Also, check out Mutiny Wallet, Lightning, Lightning, great UI. I'll be back to support. Okay, let me clarify. I'm not, and I clarified some of this on the podcast index.social. I'm not critical of anyone doing whatever they want to do with new protocols and sandboxing new ideas and that kind of thing. Not at all. We all do that. I have built Nostr things. I built the MK Ultra chat. The Fountain chat is similar to what I was building. It's not identical, but it was similar to MK Ultra. And I still will bridge that back out to ActivityPub. I want to make that happen. So, I mean, I get it. I'm not being critical. The criticalness of Nostr was from the standpoint of seeing all of this development time from people that I consider to be core Lightning developers. All this development time spent on these ideas that have like a 1% chance of ever making any impact on anything, when at the same time we have core Lightning infrastructure problems that are still broken. And that's the thing. I mean, like, you know, I have people that I like, there are good developers that are just doing crazy stuff on Nostr. And I'm like, why are you doing this?
I just want to add that Nostr Wallet Connect is not a solution. You still need a node that does stuff. And it may be okay for the Nostr network of people to set up their own node and to connect that through Nostr Wallet Connect, but it's not the solution we need. It seems like it, but it's not.
And the thing about Nostr that you really do have to remember, every time we talk about this, nobody acknowledges it, is that there is a sizable chunk of Nostr development that is being funded by venture capital and Jack Dorsey money and OpenSats. When that money goes away, the Nostr ecosystem is going to shrink down to the size of a nut.
And what I'm seeing, I follow J65 very closely. I actually follow this, a lot of this stuff. Because I'm never going to give up on something. I don't want to miss anything. But he's building a relay into his app. Mm. You got to wonder why.
Yeah, well, I mean, running the Domus last numbers I saw was running the Domus relay was costing him nearly $1,000 a month.
Yeah,
and that's just not sustainable on the long term for an indie developer.
Yeah,
where he's getting no money other than grant money.
Mm-hmm.
So those are my concerns. I just wanted to be clear. The
you're a hater.
Well, yeah. And there's also that aspect of it. Yes. Ainsley Costello, 2,500 sats.
Oh,
making it all work together.
Thank you, Ainsley.
That's through True Fans.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wait, look at this. This is Andrew Grummet.
What?
2,222.
Oh, a row of ducks. Oh, nice. Yeah, nice.
He says, go, go, go.
Go.
Kevin Bay, 10,000 sats.
Nice.
That was for the tune last week. He says, boost.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for boosting. First of all, I haven't gotten a report back from Music Mama, but if I take a look at People Pleaser, that's Ainsley's song, 363 Satoshis. and of which a significant portion went to the collaborators on that song, and just so many boostograms. It's so nice to see how the community came together for that and really made it a good experience for them. So, and that's more money than they would make on Spotify. They know it.
A lot of these are for the song last week. So I'm reading this. I'm reading the total stats that were sent.
Our
portion of that was tiny.
You're very tiny.
4,000 stats through Oppie 1984. He says, heard it on Podcasting 2.0.
Yeah, that's how you do it. Nice.
4321 from Beavenauer through Podverse. He says, value for value. 2222 from Gene Bean. Through Castomatic, he says, I wonder if Strike could be used well as a podcaster and or listener wallet. Well, if they do Bolt 12.
Yep, then we can do it. That would, what a solution that would be.
For sure. We need to figure out, we it's time to do some testing and figure out where all Bolt 12 can succeed. That,
yes.
I think it's time to do that. I'm going to do that. Dwev, part of the Castapod Bros. 32768, a 32 kilo boost, says, I came for the Podcasting 2.0 chat and stayed for the philosophy. This discussion had me thinking for a long time afterwards about inevitability, tech investment, access journalism, and the bloom coming off the rose around AI. Loved the comment about OpenAI will become the WeWork of AI. Thank you. Did you? That must have been you. That sounds like an Adam Curry.
No, that's not me.
Okay.
No.
Gene Bean, he boosted the song for 2222. He says, People Pleaser is yet another great song. Glad to hear it on the Podcasting 2.0 podcast. Randall Black, 3,000 sass for the song. V for V is the way.
Mm.
Let's see. We got a Chris You Know, 3,000 sass. Nice. Keep them coming. user, this is a great name. User 7493 3981.
Okay. From where? What app?
Fountain.
Okay.
Says People Pleaser.
Okay. Nice.
Thank you for that boost. Ainsley Costello, 2,500 sats, says making it all work together.
Again.
And again, okay. Said that again. Oh, this is part two from Chris from Jupiter Broadcasting. This is 5,000 sats. So he brought it in at 55,000 total. Thank you, Chris. He's got a part two. He says, we need a skunk lab testing FediMint support for boosts. Maybe set up a podcast index FediMint.
Yeah,
I'm not saying we should switch it.
I got to look into FediMints.
Yeah, I know nothing. I know the word. That's all I know. I don't know what it is.
No, it's you kind of pool your resources. It's an interesting concept.
That is kind of interesting. Okay. He says, I'm not saying we should switch over from Lightning anytime soon, but it would solve so many problems for listeners and podcasters. No channels, various implementations rolling out today. I say we keep an open mind. Some of this stuff might be useful to us in the future. Maybe there is a reason all these smart folks are working on this stuff. Yeah, I'll look into FediMint. I just know the word.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chris. Anonymous, 2,000 sats. He says, boost.
Boost to you.
I said he. It may be a she. Let's see. We got some of these are repeats. Oh, they must be like... these are coming in from the per minutes. Gene Bean, 2222 says, and now y'all are talking about Strike. Never mind. Okay. Sir Bill, 5,000 sats, go podcasting. Thank you, Sir Bill. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Farscapian, 10,000 sats. He says, Adam hasn't seen Biodome? Tragic.
It's on the list now. I don't want to, seem like a douche.
That was surprising that you didn't remember a Pauly Shore classic.
A Pauly Shore irritated me to no end at the MTV days. Body. I just couldn't handle it.
Was he like that in private or was that just an act?
He was weird.
Okay. 8,008. Boob donation from Kyron. He said, this is Fountain. He says, I've missed some boosts, so here's an extra to make up. Dave, you forgot to talk about the Podcasting 2.0 meetup in late July. What's happening, y'all?
Oh, yeah. What is happening with that?
Yeah, so we're trying to get a Podcasting 2.0 meetup around the Bitcoin conference in Nashville somewhere.
Yes. And well, the Costellos are going to be there with their bands at Bitcoin.
Yeah, so the current thinking is that Kyron is going to fly in to Atlanta from Brazil. So, right around that time, so I'm going to meet up with him, and we were like, well, why don't we just turn it into a podcasting 2.0 meetup, and anybody who's around town in Nashville can just meet up and have some drinks or something. So, anybody who wants to do something like that on one of those days, let's try to nail something down so that I know when that I can be there.
I really want to come. I mean, it could not be worse days. Thursday, Friday, Saturday could not be worse for me.
Yeah.
I'm
not going to the Bitcoin conference.
No, I'm not. I don't do conferences. Nope. Done with that.
I'm not spending any money. I'm not spending hundreds of dollars on a ticket for anything like that. So I will go up there and have a meetup if people want to.
There is a meeting of the Thank God for Bitcoin dudes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty interesting bunch in Nashville. I think it's a Bitcoin park actually.
There's like four things.
It's the Bitcoin conference. Okay. And around that we have the Thank God for Bitcoin meetup. We have Bands of Bitcoin and Texas Slim's Cattleman's Feast.
Okay. So if the Bands at Bitcoin, you don't have to the Cattleman's Feast. Yeah. That sounds like a pretty good meetup.
Oh no, that's an actual MEAT meetup for sure.
A meetup. Mm-hmm. the Bands at Bitcoin, is that going to be part of the conference or is that a separate?
No, it's separate. It's the Embassy Suites.
Okay.
They have the room. They have room for 600 people in the audience. I saw that Eric PP and Booberry were already working on some kind of online system that not only can you follow along at home, watch the video of the bands playing, but boost mm-hmm. them, as well as something they can show on screens there. Excuse me. So we can really show the round robin of how music in podcasting and music in podcasting 2.0 in general, value for value, works.
Okay. So my thinking is we try to just put the 2.0 meetup pretty much around the Bands of Bitcoin thing.
Now, Boobery's saying July 28th. Is that, what is it? Is that Sunday? When is July 28th? I have to take a look now. 28th. Let me see. July. What day is that? It's going to be suck. Everything. My life sucks. That's a Sunday.
Okay. Cheer up, brother.
I have this crazy job that just keeps me busy. Like, I can barely go. My wife's taking me away to Mexico for my 60th birthday. I'm like, that's fine, but I'm going to be doing podcasts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 28th is a Sunday. Yes, that's a Sunday.
Oh, that's a Behind the Schemes episode they're going to do. Okay. All right. Okay. So there's a lot going on. A lot going on. But even Tina's like, you know, you should kind of go to that. I'm like,
oh, really?
Yeah, but then I have to set up.
Well, it's just so close to me. It's only 2-hour drive.
Yeah, for you, Birmingham. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's nothing. Yeah, so I can make it up there for something like that. Bands of Bitcoin. I'll figure out. I'll post something on the social, but please, anybody who's going to be there, let me know. Email or podcastindex.social. Let me know you're going to be there so we can put a meetup together.
Yes.
Because Kyron is flying into Atlanta. Let's see. Is this the limiter? Let me check. I got to make sure this is, we got Clarkian. Clarkian sent a song boost. He's of 1,000 sats. He says V for V.
Nice.
I'm sorry. That was 20,000 sats.
Awesome. Ooh, beautiful.
Clarkian is my buddy. I know who that is. we already got Gene Bean. All right. So we got the delimiter, 22,000 sats from Comic Strip Blogger.
Yay.
Through Fountain. Thank you, Chromosphere Blogger. He says, howdy, Dave and Adam. I'd like to again recommend a podcast by two Texans, Ben and Gene. They talk about fun stuff. Quote from the last episode. Gene, Ben's more likely to do a show if he doesn't have to pay for it. Ben, well, and you know, you are getting that podcasting 2.0 money. So, Gene, what podcasting 2.0 money? Ben, you're the one who has the index listed and going on your lightning node. Gene, oh yeah. Find their podcast at www.justtwogoodoldboys.com. Yo, CSB.
Do you understand it? Do you understand what that was about?
No, I didn't. No, none. Absolutely zero idea. We got some monthlies. Chad Farrow, $20.22. K. Cameron Rose, $25. Podpage, Brendan at Podpage, $25. Mark Graham, $1. New Media Productions, or excuse me, New Media LLC, $1. Randall Black, $5. Joseph Maraca, $5. And Emilio Cano Molina, $4. And that's our group.
Beautiful. Thank you all so much. It's a value for value project, which means you put back into it whatever you get out of it. That's up to you. We really appreciate all the support people have been giving. Certainly our hosters who are out there. Thank you so much. Yeah. And even some of those apps like, you know, there you go. Oscar, Mary Oscar, Andrew Grummet, man. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Great talking to you.
Don't be no stranger.
All right.
and definitely see if you can erase some of my files that you have there. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Got you.
Some incriminating stuff. Those pictures. Yeah. Get rid of that. Anything else you want to close with, Andrew?
No, it's all good. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you all very much here in the boardroom. Dave, brother, have a great weekend.
You too, guys.
Everybody take care. Andrew, thanks again, my man.
Later.
And we will be back. Wait, I have to stop. Are we back next Friday? No.
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 No. False. This is fake news.
Fake news. We're not back next Friday because I'll be traveling to see my daughter in Rotterdam. And we're going to do the show after that on Saturday. Is that confirmed?
That's the week after. That's the week after.
Yeah, the week after. Yeah, I'm traveling back on Friday again. Unfortunately, this is how it works out. But then we're going to try and do it on Saturday.
Okay, I'm going to email the Albie guys right up to the show and see if they can do Saturday.
Good. Okay. So it's summer months, and then in July somewhere you're gone too, right?
July 5th through the 13th, I'm going to be gone. We're taking a family vacation.
Oh, so man, the boardroom is falling apart.
Skeleton crew.
That's right. Summer hours, everybody. So we'll see you in 2 weeks right here on Podcasting 2.0.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting! Drop the dongle.